trips, but dozens of trips. I had written 41 instead of 31. Dr. Martin has been in the area of Jerusalem working over many years for a total of 31 visits, and more to come, I would assume. Yes, Dr. Martin?
Well, I hope so. It's a little difficult to go down there right now, as we all know, and some of the areas I would like to visit and some of the people I would like to see about this very matter are so occupied with the problems that it's not the nicest place on earth to be.
Yes, as your host and friend, I would suggest you hold off a little longer.
Ada, thank you.
I'm trying to put this picture in my mind of a 600 by 600, that's two football, American football fields on a side by 450 feet tall building. And this was what year again?
Herod started the rebuilding of this to that size. He doubled the size of the former temple to that size that you gave right there. And he did that starting in around 20 B.C.
Right,
it was certainly that size when Jesus was here. And he was talking about the temple, when he was inside the temple, and he was referring to it. That was the temple that he meant.
Was this just a temple, or was it office buildings? Was it also? This is, had to be one of the most imposing structures of the ancient world period.
Actually, what it was a, it was a tower that had an interior to it, mainly of stairwells, so that you could get up to the top. There was a platform on the top, and three different levels, very small levels up there on top, and that is actually where the temple courts were. It was in this 600-foot square building, like a penthouse, more or less, on top of a building. If you go to Los Angeles or up here in Portland, for example, there's some 45-story buildings here and then occupy about a whole block.
Yeah.
So that would be a very good description of what the temple was like. But on top of that, on top of the platform, is where the actual temple was, with its three different compartments, and where the priests did their administration.
So it was essentially a large block structure. Not, I don't want to use the term pyramid, but it was pyramidal in design. It was mostly rock and block.
As a matter of comparison, Jeff, the pyramid, the Great Pyramid of Giza in Egypt, is in height. It's slightly smaller than the temple would have been. Believe it or not, it would have been one of the wonders of the world if it would have continued to exist to this day.
That's my point. It had to take a heck of a lot of effort to tear the thing down.
Absolutely, and that is what Jesus said, and that's one of the reasons why I have written my book, is to show that his prophetic teachings concerning that temple, that not one stone would be left on top of another, has indeed taken place. You cannot find any stones that in that area that would suggest that the temple actually existed that way. But we have the eyewitness accounts of Josephus, the Jewish historian, who accompanied Titus and the Roman legions there at the time of the destruction of the temple from 66 to 70 A.D. And his eyewitness account is cogent. It is absolutely accurate. He never makes a mistake on what he is saying, as far as measurements are concerned. But our scholar friends, including me, up to about 10 years ago, 5 years ago, really, we would just say that Josephus had to be exaggerating in what he was saying, because there is nothing with the Haram Sharif, that is what we call the Temple Mount today, up at the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque, none of those stones up there fit what Josephus says at all. And they just absolutely do not. And another thing that surprised people when they go to Jerusalem for the first time, and if they're Christians and they are well aware of the prophetic teachings in Matthew 24 about Jesus saying that the stones would not be on top of one another, they are rather aghast to find these gigantic stones, over 10,000 of them, still intact in their pristine condition in this rectangular building, which was north of the temple, about 1,000 feet, really, 600 feet on one side, but I mean up to the Dome of the Rock is about 1,000 feet north of where the temple actually was.
That creates a little bit of a problem. On the one hand, if you look at things the way you and your associates have determined them, Jesus looks magnificent in terms of his prophecy. On the other hand, people adhering to the current location would have a little reconciliation, wouldn't they?
They would, and definitely so.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that when I took my wife down there for the first time to see this, her question was, well, there should not be any stones there. It took me a little bit of ingenuity to explain, as I did in those days, and that most of us, most scholars would assume to be the case, to be able to justify Jesus somewhat, is to say that he was not talking about the outer walls of the temple, but only the inner.
I remember that argument. I've heard that in the past.
That is normally the one that that makes us breathe a little easier, you see. However, that is not what he means, because as I explain in my book, when that prophecy was given in Matthew 24 about the stones not being one on another, they were outside the temple and looking back at the temple, the exterior walls at that time. And clearly in the Bible, the walls were as much a part of the temple as the building itself. And when you read Josephus's description of the city of Jerusalem, not only the temple, but the city after the Roman war was over in 70 AD, he said that any person who would come there, having seen the city before, would not even believe there was once a city in the area.
Huh. And
it was so devastated.
Well, now, they didn't have explosives back then either. They had to pull these apart with, what, slave labor? And
that is correct, and the reason for it is explained by Josephus himself. He said that after the war was over, the Jews, or most people in the Middle East at that time, they did not have banks like we have today. They would hide their gold usually in a wall of their homes or something of that nature. Frequently, they would move it from one place to another, and they would cement it up, you know.
Sure.
And the temple itself was a repository of great wealth. It was just like our Fort Knox for all practical
purposes. Oh, so the motive was goodies.
Oh, absolutely. And when the fires began to demolish the city, much of that gold began to melt and trickle down into the rubble. And for the next 6 months after the war was over, they left the 10th Legion there of 5,000 soldiers to supervise the slaves, the Jewish slaves that they still had. And what they did, they turned every stone there was of that city upside down looking for the gold.
Is that where the expression came from?
That's exactly it.
Is that right?
That is it. And the price of gold, Josephus said, went down a half throughout the whole of the eastern part of the Roman Empire because of the gold that was taken from the ruins of Jerusalem.
50% because of the flooding of the market with new gold.
Yes, exactly.
Cut the cost in half.
In half.
That's extraordinary.
It really is. And that caused a depression to take place in the in the eastern part of the empire. That was quickly overcome. But then they were able to revive themselves. But Jerusalem was left in complete shambles. And as I said, Josephus gives the description, and even Titus, who was the son of the emperor and later emperor himself, and he was the general in charge of the Roman armies at the time, he made a trip after the destruction was over up to Antioch and came back about 6 months later, and he made the statement that if I had not have been here and conducted this war, I would not have realized there was a city in this area.
Oh, that's amazing.
Absolutely torn down to all the walls, every block of stone torn up. And that's what Jesus said for the whole city of Jerusalem would take place in the 19th chapter of Luke. I know it's rather astounding for his prophecy there. But
when did he say it would happen?
Read what Josephus says as an eyewitness. There you are. I have it in the book.
When did Jesus predict that this utter demolition would occur?
In 30 AD, just about 2 days before his crucifixion. It's found in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21, the general prophecy.
What time frame did he say this damage would occur, the destruction?
He did not. It was within the framework of the end of the age. He did not designate when that would be. In fact, the disciples asked him, when will the end of the age be? And he said that he did not know, but neither the angels in heaven, but his Father. That's what he said at that time. And in Matthew 24 and 25, he gives quite a good deal of teaching there to tell the disciples that they really wouldn't know the precise time.
Mm-hmm.
But the way he was talking, they surmised it would be soon. And obviously 30 AD, in 66 is when the Jews went to war with the Romans. They were expecting the Messiah to come at that time, in that period of time. And as a result, the Romans brought their legions down, and after about 3.5 years, they left Jerusalem in shambles and exactly fulfilling the prophecies that Jesus said. So it all took place within a generation. Now, there are lots of scholars who feel that many of these prophecies have an end time, repetitious type of a meaning to them, and that type of interpretation has been around for a long time. But the initial prophecies were fulfilled from 66 to 70 A.D.
All right, we'll talk more about prophecy as we continue. That's our first hour. The book is The Temples That Jerusalem Forgot, an exhaustively well-researched and brilliantly footnoted book by Dr. Ernest L. Martin, available to ASK, P.O. Box 25,000, Portland, Oregon, 97298. That's ASK, P.O. Box 25000, Portland, Oregon, 97298. $24.95 gets the book delivered to your door. 486 pages of extraordinary history come to life by the work of Dr. Ernest L. Martin. We'll be back. Hour number two coming up in just a few minutes. I'm Jeff Rentz. Glad you're here. Hope you're finding this interesting as we look at history as it pertains to today and tomorrow. Be right back.